This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, are we closer to ending the 18-year war in Afghanistan, which has claimed the lives of more than 100,000 people? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The United States and the Afghan Taliban reached a partial truce last week that has led to a seven-day reduction in violence. A major upcoming hurdle will be negotiations between the Taliban and the Afghan government that may lead to a negotiated settlement. This, according to the New York-based Sufan Center, a nonprofit organization which provides research and analysis on global security issues. According to the New York Times, there was an 80% drop in major attacks because of a seven-day period of violence reduction agreed to by the Taliban and Afghan security forces. That compliance rate will probably be sufficient for the signing of the deal to go forward on February 29 in the Gulf state of Qatar. According to the New York Times, quote, an agreement would formally begin the end of the United States' longest war by laying out a conditional timeline for the remaining 12,000 U.S. troops to withdraw from Afghanistan, close quote. One major question on the minds of analysts is if the Taliban orders its fighters to stand down, does the organization have the will and ability to enforce the order? At what point would the U.S. be willing to engage in a troop withdrawal? If the United States is able to reach a deal with the Taliban and the Taliban comes to terms with the Afghan government, how will they deal with the issue of the Islamic State Khorasan province, a very destabilizing force? In addition, for Afghans, this could be the beginning of a difficult phase because bitter enemies will have to find their way to a peace and a possible reconciliation, something that their country has not seen in generations. With us to analyze prospects for peace in Afghanistan are two distinguished analysts who are no strangers to these VOA microphones. Ambassador Ronald Newman is the president of the American Academy of Diplomacy. That's a nonpartisan association consisting of former U.S. ambassadors and high-level government officials whose mission is to strengthen and support U.S. diplomacy. That's quite a task these days. And prior to joining the group, he served as ambassador to Algeria, Bahrain, and Afghanistan. And Scott Warden, he's the director of Afghanistan and Central Asia programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and that's a nonpartisan organization dedicated to global conflict resolution. Prior to joining USIP, Scott was a senior policy advisor at the U.S. Agency for International Development, responsible for advising senior officials on strategies for sustainable development in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Ambassador Ronald Newman, previous deals have come close, but ultimately have broken down because of Taliban attacks and escalating violence. What's different about the juncture we're at now, in your view?
I expect we will sign. I think it's a good chance. It may break down again. Where I would differ from the New York Times a little is that I would not call this the first step to withdrawal, but like Churchill, this may be the end of the beginning. It's not yet the beginning of the end. There is a long process to go. This starts it, has a slim chance for peace. Any number of things could go wrong, may go wrong several times even. The context is that there is no chance of a military victory, and there is a great risk to the homeland if we abandon Afghanistan and see Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State growing. So between no chance and bad risk, this is the best you got, even though it's slim.
So, Scott Warden, the best we have, even if it's slim, how do you see this juncture?
I agree. I maybe am a bit more cautiously optimistic because this agreement, assuming it's signed, and as the ambassador mentioned, more importantly, the negotiations among Afghans, the intra-Afghan negotiations, which both sides have promised to begin shortly after the U.S. agreement is signed, would be a major breakthrough in this conflict. And that opens a new set of possibilities, maybe not high probability of success, but it's a new opportunity and a new dynamic to shift the discussion from what are the internationals doing in Afghanistan to what can Afghans do with each other to try to improve the situation. Now, international support and U.S. support, U.S. troops are still essential to prevent the kind of collapse that would lead to greater safe havens for Al-Qaeda and ISIS that could threaten the homeland. I very much agree with that. But the real issue here is a political conflict among different ethnic factions, different geographic regions of Afghanistan. And that's something that has to be resolved through negotiation. And the promise of this agreement is that those negotiations can finally start. And that opens new opportunities that hopefully we can reinforce and capitalize on.
But in order for those negotiations to start, Ambassador Newman, there has to be some semblance of unity among the Afghan government. And right now, we're seeing some dispute between President Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah. The elections were supposed to strengthen the government's hand. And now we're seeing these frictions. How much of an impediment is that? And do you see it somehow resolving itself before these intra-Afghan talks start out?
I think you may get enough compromise to start really getting the differences worked out, if you ever do, will happen in and around the talks. I do not see the Afghan side coming together and saying, hey, here's a clear strategy here. They don't work that way. So you get agreement on the people. But look, the fundamental problem which underlies this is that if President Ghani has a mixed group, as he does, then you're going to have leaks and you're going to have disagreements. If President Ghani has a tightly controlled group that is all his, then you have a much more controlled process, but you build no constituency for the peace agreement that comes out of talks because everybody who's a doubter is on the outside waiting to be critical. So this tension between the fact that you need people in to have a constituency for peace and you need control in order to negotiate, one, you're not going to have a final solution to. You're going to negotiate and you're going to sidestep and go back and forth in probably a very rough process. The consolation is we don't know how much control the Taliban has over their own fighters. We know that they have a lot of control over their negotiating delegation. They're able to operate very much as a uniform team. Whether that represents real agreement, though, there have been some long pauses where they had to go back to headquarters for agreement. So we don't actually know how much tight control they have. In short, it's an Afghan process.
Well, Scott Warden, we know that there are shortcomings on the Taliban side, but address those shortcomings on the Afghan government side with respect to the dispute between Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah that we're witnessing in recent days.
I would start my answer by going back a year at the beginning of the presidential campaign, as well as the beginning of the effort by Ambassador Khalilzad to work toward a peace agreement. And you had two opposing tracks. One is a competitive election race where there's only one winner, and that's an exclusive process that's going to leave people out. The peace process, everybody agrees, needs to be inclusive to be successful and, most importantly, to be sustainable. And so running an election process that has one winner and a peace process that should generate multiple winners is a very challenging effort. And that's reaching ahead right now with the election results announced, President Ghani being announced as the winner, and a whole other faction that won nearly half the votes, disappointed that they won't have a chance to be in power. So this is a fundamentally difficult issue to enter negotiations with the government side having internal differences. Having said all of that, I think there are two key issues that these negotiations will be grappling with. One is, what is the system of government? What kind of government will run Afghanistan? And that's been characterized in shorthand as the republic, a democratic system for choosing leadership, versus an emirate, which is the Taliban's old way of ruling Afghanistan, which is undemocratic. And the vast majority of Afghans, as well as political leaders, want a democratic system of some kind. Who runs that system? That's what this election dispute is all about. And those feelings run very deep and strongly. And I think we will have complicated intersection of debate over what kind of government it is, but also who's in charge. And that makes this a very unpredictable negotiation.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Ambassador Ronald Newman, he's president of the American Academy of Diplomacy, and Scott Warden, from whom you just heard. He's director of the Afghanistan and Central Asia programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace. We're discussing a possible peace deal between the United States and the Afghan Taliban, leading to a more negotiated settlement and peace in Afghanistan. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener from Nairobi, Kenya, Joseph Konge Musiu. Thanks for your feedback on Facebook, Joseph. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to Ambassador Newman talking about peace in Afghanistan. Ambassador Newman, let's say the deal is signed in Qatar, Doha, between the United States and Taliban. What is the next step? What comes after that?
We haven't seen the deal, so remember that our answers are just a little bit problematic. But as I understand it, there is a timetable for a troop withdrawal. I do not know when that troop withdrawal starts, whether there's some symbolic little piece of it that goes right off the bat or whether it waits a little bit. But one track is withdrawal. The other track is the starting of Afghan negotiations. And in theory, the withdrawal is supposed to be conditions-based. That's what Secretary Pompeo said the other day. So you could see the withdrawal held up. And then you have the question of whether the Taliban keep it, whether you see incidents of violence or attacks to which we have to withdraw. So it's going to be a multi-track process. It's not going to be a sequential process. It's going to be a process on multiple tracks simultaneously.
Do you see it that way, Scott? A multiple track simultaneously? Or is there a sequence? Like, do the intra-Afghan talks have to get on their way before any troop withdrawal? How do you see it going forward?
I see it largely the same way. As I said before, the most immediate milestone after signing the agreement is the start of intra-Afghan negotiations. And that will be a matter of maybe 2 weeks, according to the plan. The question that is outstanding is, how are troop withdrawals and how does international support relate to progress in those talks? We understand the deal between the United States and the Taliban that's going to be signed is fundamentally about U.S. troops and Taliban counterterrorism guarantees, specifically no safe havens to Al-Qaeda and continuing to fight against ISIS. But reaching the larger political settlement, which frankly could take years of negotiations based on other complicated peace processes, that's something that is not directly tied to U.S. troop withdrawal. And I think the real question to look for is, how does the negotiation over a political settlement relate to U.S. troop levels? Ultimately, it will be governed by how does the United States feel its security is being protected. But we cannot have protection against terrorist groups in Afghanistan unless there is greater political stability. So the two are unfortunately, but inevitably intertwined.
Well, back to you, Ambassador Newman. This troop withdrawal obviously is important for U.S. politics, for President Trump, as he approaches the 2020 election. He made a promise to withdraw, but as Secretary of State Pompeo said, we're not going to withdraw unless the withdrawal is going to be based on conditions. So it's sort of a catch-22. Do you have any benchmark where you think that partial withdrawal could begin? What's the interplay?
Presumably, they have a timeline specified. I don't know what the timeline is. Beyond that, you're looking at things where you should not be too automatic. You don't know if it's going to work, so you don't want to put a hard stop on it. I would not be surprised if the Taliban test us. There are a variety of kinds of tests. You may see creeping forces. It's not a clash, but they're positioning themselves to attack something. You may see selective assassinations of officials. Then you will have the decision of whether we will use force occasionally to show that we're serious about the agreement being kept. Since you also have spoilers, criminals, you can have assassinations that aren't political. You've got the Islamic State, which would love to blow this all up. You're going to have a level of violence going on that makes it also a little difficult to distinguish clearly whether things are being kept. So you're going to be in a constant process of measuring this stuff, thinking about it, and deciding whether you have to react or not.
Back to you, Scott Warden, to talk about some of these spoilers on the side of the Taliban in particular. You talked earlier about the shortcomings on the Afghan government side. And also, is there going to be an outside mediator? Will Zalmay Khalilzad, chief U.S. envoy, be involved with the talks? I mean, will there be somebody on the outside helping to negotiate or as be a broker?
Certainly Ambassador Khalilzad will play a role advancing U.S. interests in these talks, which are substantial. But most complicated international peace processes of this kind would have an official mediator, and no mediator has been designated yet. When an agreement was contemplated at the end of last summer, Norway was mentioned as a possible host of talks. That's different from being a mediator, but they have a lot of experience in different conflicts, including most recently in resolving the Colombia conflict, in helping the sides get together and organize their ideas, which is short of mediation in this case. So that's a possibility. But fundamentally, once these talks get going, assuming there's good faith on both sides, assuming there is some positive momentum, having a mediator, whether it's the UN, whether it's a country like Norway, or whether it's other distinguished individuals, will most likely be needed to help continue progress over, as we've described, what will be a very complicated and time-consuming process.
Ambassador Newman, we know that theoretically the Taliban has accepted to talk with the government, something they had refused to do before. They have theoretically said that they will renounce Al-Qaeda, prevent that group from recruiting and training members. How much can we take them at their word? How do you judge their ability to fulfill this commitment, which is critical to going forward?
I'm skeptical, but they're apparently putting some of the right words on paper. There was an article supposedly by Sirajuddin Haqqani, number two in the Taliban, that the New York Times published. An organization that is supposed to break with Al-Qaeda and cannot name Al-Qaeda in a public document and says only we will control extremism and nobody should feel insecure in Afghanistan. Hell, we're not worried about being insecure in Afghanistan. We're worried about being insecure in the homeland. So that's a very dubious document. But the point is, what you put down on paper is one thing, what you do is another. So you get what you can on paper, and you have enough flexibility to watch and enforce. And then the other big question, and it's one the Taliban will measure, is what is our will? Do we really have the will to stay if they play games with us? I think President Trump would like to leave, but I think President Trump does not want to be taken for a fool. He does not want to be gamed by the Taliban, and that was one of the reasons, part of the breakdown before. So I think there is some reason to believe that we are not going to just use this as a cover and rush for the door. Secretary Pompeo has been very clear, said exactly the right things about staying. And while there's discontent in America, there are also strong political forces that do not want us to run for the door. Many of them are in Secretary Pompeo's own party. So there's a strong basis to proceed with caution and firmness.
Scott Worden, what is the relationship between Pakistan and the Afghan Taliban, the so-called Haqqani Network, and what role will they play, if any, in helping to consolidate this agreement and move forward toward a peaceful settlement?
Well, Pakistan has had a long and enduring relationship supporting the Taliban, both in terms of advice, in terms of material support for their efforts, and prominently safe havens. Many of the Taliban leaders have been in Pakistan for years. So Pakistan definitely has influence on this process. I think there are indications that Pakistan has, unlike previous attempts, they have supported a peace talk process, and they have pressured the Taliban to engage in one. That is far short of what they could be doing, Pakistan, but it has helped to get to this point. I think that their support of the Taliban and their position on potential deals, and of course, Pakistan has a strong interest in Afghanistan as a neighbor that's been a source of conflict in the past. It will depend on the nature of the political solution and whether Pakistan thinks its political interests and its long-term security, as Pakistan sees it, are addressed in a settlement. So I think they are supportive of talks, which is good, but the ultimate support of a settlement will depend on the terms, which are very much unclear right now.
So do you see it that way, Ambassador Newman? Is Pakistan in support of these talks? And if so, will they exert the influence that they have, leverage over the Taliban to remain committed as well and not to spoil the agreement or in any way violate the letter and spirit of the agreement?
Nobody knows. Pakistanis have made any number of promises about controlling violence of various groups. They have broken most of those promises. They've been a supporter of the Taliban. Now, I think they'd probably like a peace. They don't want necessarily any peace. They want a peace where they still have influence in Afghanistan, and they want one where they think that they don't have dangers. So they're going to be judging as things go along. And if things seem to them to be moving in a direction that meets their interests, I expect they will be helpful. And if things seem to be moving in a direction that they think is not in their interest, even if it is in the interest of peace in Afghanistan, I expect the Pakistanis will be a spoiler. I would say everything one does with Pakistan has to be demonstrated and checked.
Scott Worden, anything to add or subtract to that? And also, what about the United States-Pakistan relationship? How would you characterize it? And does it help or hurt the Afghan peace process?
The U.S.-Pakistan relationship is not good right now, measured against a historical average that has had a lot of difficulties. So again, there has been short-term cooperation to a limited extent in terms of the peace process, and that helps. I think Pakistan has long wanted the U.S. to see Pakistan as a strategic ally beyond just the Afghanistan theater, and the U.S. has focused mostly on Pakistan's support for the Taliban and not on other issues. So I think Pakistan would like to move beyond Afghanistan, and maybe they're being helpful for that reason. But it is a very complicated relationship, and there is a lot of work to do to get it to a normal level. The other thing I would say is that while Pakistan has been the biggest supporter of the Taliban and probably has the strongest spoiling potential of this deal, it's not the only one. And so Iran has recently supported the Taliban in tactical ways. Obviously, the relationship between the U.S. and Iran is at its lowest point since 1979. So Iran is also a potential spoiler, and the relationship with the U.S. come into play. Russia has a lot of influence in Afghanistan. That relationship with the U.S. is troubled. So it's not the only one, and I think that the regional dynamics do have to be kept in the front view, because as a deal gets nearer, regional players could push to make it happen, which in a positive way, but they could also act against the U.S.'s security interests if they choose to.
Well, we're certainly in uncharted territory, and as if these regional spoilers weren't bad enough, Ambassador Newman, you previously mentioned the Islamic State Khorasan Province Network. Talk about the threat that they pose, because I don't think the deal signed deals with this particular threat, the Islamic State group.
No, they're not part of the deal. They are at war with both the Afghan government and the Taliban, which is okay, from my point of view, but I wouldn't want to subcontract our fight with the Islamic State to a group that's still allied with Al-Qaeda. But they're going to go on fighting. They have been knocked out of some places, but they've shown a lot of resilience, particularly in Nangarhar and to some extent in Farah in the west. And they also pose a problem for the Taliban, because they are a pole to which more radical Taliban can move if they are unhappy with the agreement in the peace process. So the Islamic State Khorasan is a complicating factor for Taliban command and control of its fighters. If fighters feel that they're being sold out and they want to continue the fight, they have a place to go.
How do you see that, Scott Worden, the role of Islamic State Khorasan province with respect to these negotiations? To what extent they still pose a threat to Afghans? And will there be a mechanism, even if they're not a party to these talks, some kind of a mechanism to monitor them and thwart their actions?
I agree that the Islamic State is a spoiler and a complicating factor in this. The Taliban are Afghan. They have national political ambitions. A lot of elements are as a nationalist movement, and that means you can negotiate and seek common political positions. ISIS is not like that. They are largely a foreign force, whether they have Afghan recruits or not. They aspire to, you know, an absolute form of Islamic rule that even the Taliban is opposed to. So ISIS is not an entity that you can negotiate with, that anybody is seeking to negotiate with. They're a force that needs to be opposed. And if there's any silver lining in this, it's that both the Taliban and the United States and the Afghan government, all three, want to see ISIS gone.
Which tells you why ISIS has every reason to be a spoiler any way they can.
Well, gentlemen, something tells me we'll be back at these microphones talking about this Afghan peace process in the not-too-distant future. But for now, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my wonderful guests, Ambassador Ronald Newman, he's president of the American Academy of Diplomacy, and Scott Worden, director of the Afghanistan and Central Asia Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Gentlemen, thanks once again for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. Encounter was produced right here in Washington, D.C. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.